Okay, so we're out of executive session and moving back into regular session. And today's Monday, September 13th, 2021. This is the business meeting of the Elizabeth School Board of Directors, and we're moving back into regular session at 6:16 p.m. Would you please stand and join me in the pledge of allegiance?
The pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have no education showcases, so we will. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. Beckendorf?
Yes.
Dr. Frumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the board meeting of August 23rd, 2021?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. Beckendorf?
Yes.
Dr. Frumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the special BOE meeting of August 30, 2021?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. Beckendorf?
Yes.
Dr. Frumfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye.
We'll move into communications and we'll get our HR update from Kim. Hi, Kim. Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you all?
Good. Well, thanks.
Good. So I don't have a lot to fill you in. I've been pretty much doing one thing more than anything, and that's we're still actively hiring for this school year. Normally by now, things have quieted down and we filled our positions, and we filled most of our positions. The one area that we're really having a challenge with is our special ed group, including mostly paraprofessionals. And I was just talking to Jason about some ideas, additional ideas. We have from what I understand, we've had a fairly significant increase in our special ed students this year, and it's caused an issue for us. We have need for a number of paraprofessionals. We've hired a number of them because most of these people are really critical to these students all day. They stay with these students all day. We've hired 6 paraprofessionals already, and we haven't hired enough.
Wow.
Kind of piggybacking on that is a substitute paraprofessionals, which are even harder to hire. We've hired 8 of those, and we're continuing to do that. But it's been that's our biggest challenge right now, is paraprofessionals for our special ed students. And so that's a lot of what I've been doing, a lot of recruiting, a lot of getting people on board, that type of thing. But we've had some successes with hiring, too, that I wanted to kind of update you on. One is that we have hired a part-time school nurse over at the high school. We had a part-time health technician working under Lori Clark's license, but now we have a part-time school nurse, an RN, and she'll be starting in November 1st, so that's a big hire for us, and she comes highly, highly recommended. And then Douglas and I started interviews this morning for our Director of School Safety and Emergency Planning. Right now we're focusing on 2 candidates. We have others that we can talk to, but right now we're focusing on the 2 most highly qualified candidates. We had one good interview this morning. This person was from out of state, so we did it via Zoom. And then we have another one from with a local individual that applied. And both of them have a lot of experience in the safety and emergency planning area in school districts. So we're really pleased about that.
Okay.
We'll see how these 2 interviews go. The first one went well today. We anticipate that the second one will go well tomorrow, but we'll see. And it'll be nice again to have hopefully have a choice rather than somebody that we, you know, the only person left over. So we may have a choice of 2 candidates if everything goes well tomorrow. That's really about it. I've been working on some other things, but I don't think they'd be particularly interesting to you, to be honest with you.
Ken, yes. where are you going for the paraprofessionals, the special?
We're out there. Probably the key area that we're using is Indeed.com.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We've got a lot of applicants, and some of them, most of them in Indeed that we get are not particularly great applicants for the positions. However, we do get applicants that most of the ones that we've hired in this last several weeks have been through Indeed. So we do get good applicants. And then Jason is put in something in Facebook, on their Facebook jobs page. So we're going to be hopefully getting some good applicants from those. I don't know if you had any suggestions.
I don't. I'm just thinking that is that an opportunity for an internship type of a position with at some point from the colleges or schools?
I hadn't thought about that. We are interestingly, I'd say three or maybe even four of our SPED paras that we've hired in the last few weeks have been recently graduated Elizabeth High School students. And these are full-time jobs. Our pay has improved thanks to what you all have approved in the past. So we're pretty competitive in terms of pay. And these kids are getting benefits, full-time benefits also. So I hadn't really given a whole lot of thought to that. But I know that we are hiring some very young people for that. And from what I understand, it's working out pretty well.
Good.
We just have to, it's a numbers game for us right now.
Yeah.
We have to hire enough. You would think, if you look at our roster of substitutes, you would think that we have enough to cover. We have way more substitutes than daily positions available, but it's these positions for special ed are tough to fill. A lot of people want to stay away from it. They really don't understand it, and once they get into it, I mean, I was talking to an 18-year-old we just hired who had just graduated from Elizabeth High School last year, and she's working with a young boy over at Runny Creek, and she's loving it. So it's just it's a numbers game for us. We just need to hire enough so that we can fill all the positions when we need to. So, So that's it. Like I said, there's some other things that I'm doing that I find incredibly interesting, but I don't think you would, to be honest with you. So that's it. That's it now. And then any questions?
Awesome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
Good to see you all again.
Yeah,
it's
good
been
to
a
see
while.
You too.
Yeah.
Next up, we have our technology update with Marty.
It's that time of year when I give you guys a share with you our results of the tech survey that I give to staff every May. Did I turn this on?
It looks like it's on.
Yeah.
Just do this. There it is. So as a reminder, I give these surveys out every May. When I first started working here, my baseline survey was done in September of 2014, and then we do one essentially every May. And we ask 20 questions. So we ask 20 questions in these areas: instruction delivery, how do you use technology as a teacher, which should be a do there. Student collaboration and engagement, how do your students use technology in the classroom. Assessment, how do you use technology to assess student learning. Professional practice, how do you use technology for professional productivity, and what is your current skill level, and then technology conditions according to your experience. What is the current state of tech and support? So this past May, we had 150 total responses, 100 of which were teachers. Last May, and if you remember, I pick up some data, show you three, one from our baseline, one from last year, and one this year.
Marty,
yeah.
Who were the 58 that weren't teachers?
So I think this is and I hadn't looked at the data really closely yet, but when they go through and fill out the form, there is an other. So I'm wondering if some of our teachers had answered other instead of K-5 teacher, middle school teacher, high school teacher. Either they weren't paying attention. That's what I think it is.
Got it.
It could be also that we had more responses from the classified staff this year than in years past. but I would assume that that's probably what happened, and maybe I need to, for next year's survey, maybe I can change the question a little bit so it's more sure. clear, and we'll get a better
I just didn't know if students were taking this too or not.
No, this is just staff.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And so one of the questions that I asked way back in 2014 is how important is technology in your classroom? And so it was 0, which is not meaningful. 5 is meaningful, but optional. You don't see optional there. And 10 is essential. So I wanted to get a good gauge of, back then, how important did our staff think technology was, or teachers thought technology was, in terms of their instruction. This is the question last year, moving more to the right, meaning to say that more and more of our teachers are feeling that technology is essential. And in this past year, you'll see that 44% has felt that it's more important. Part of that probably has to do with remote learning and the pandemic, et cetera. At some point, I think it's going to be like anything else in any other industries, like where technology is just part of what you do, is part of the job, right? And so I think maybe in a year or two, this question will probably go away, because it's like, how can you teach in today's age without using technology? One of the things I like to ask is, what's your proficiency level in? And I don't want you to necessarily have to worry about all the little, what categories I asked. This is back, I first asked this question back in 2016. So I can assess, like, where do we need more training? What does it look like? How do our staff feel like their proficiency in? The things to keep in mind, and what's the colors to look for that are important, are the yellow, which is proficient, and the light blue, which is advanced. And so back in 2016 May, we had more of the green and dark blue bands, which were like beginning and developing. And so the goal was to shorten those bands and widen the yellow and light blue bands. And so this is how it was back in 2020 of May. Some of the categories have changed, and so they're not necessarily, it's not an apples to apples in terms of what's in this category. It's whatever we've been using, or what's being used currently in the classroom or staff's hands. And so, oops, I went back too far. So this was 2020 May. So you can see that those yellow and light blue bands are getting bigger. And then here it is from last year, even bigger still. So again, the goal is to get those green pieces and blue pieces shorter as we go along. And that gives me a good idea of what we might do for professional development. I do also ask, like, what would you like more training in? And so last year, in May, you'll notice that the number one answer was remote distance learning because of the situation that we were in. And I did point out, I remember last September as well, that I was surprised at how many thought that they didn't, there's a none at 17.89%, like how many of our teachers felt like they didn't need any additional training. And so this is this year's, 2021, and you'll see that now the biggest answer is none. I guess I'm done. I don't need to do that. No, but that's, all this, obviously, that's a good place to be at, meaning that our teachers and staff feel like they have learned a lot and they don't need, obviously everybody, including myself, always needs training to evolve in whatever the new technologies are. But it was interesting to see that answer here. One of the questions I always ask is, or I started to ask back then, is like, how do you feel about the tech that you have? Because if you don't feel good about your tech, then you're going to feel like you're not going to be adequate at your job. And so this is how it was back, way back when, in 2014. What the computer assigned to me is inadequate to extremely capable. And you can see how they answered there back then. Last year, moving more over to the right. And then this year, even more so. And you'll always get some people here in this area because of our refresh schedule. It's a 5-year refresh schedule, so I would assume that these are the people who have the 5 or 4-year-old computers, obviously. And that's an important piece, too, back to this one, is that because we want to make sure that our staff feels like they can depend on the technology that they use. This is the question regarding students, and so we asked the staff, the computers my student use are inadequate or capable. And so back in 2014, most of it was over to the left. Last year, 2020 May, more ratings over to the right, and then this past May, 2021, still moving over more. And so, you know, this is a concern. I'm not sure why some people answered that question in that way. It could be because we had some older computer labs at the high school that we just refreshed this summer. I think that's, if I look closely at the data, that's probably those three teachers. That's where that might be. And then the other one that was also important from a while back was how many computers, and do we feel like we have enough computers for student use? This is back in 2017. This is last year before the summer. If you remember, the summer is when we got the influx of funding and we were able to go one-to-one. So, you know, my hope was that when people answered this year,
right,
it would all be over there. And so in most cases, they are. And there's still like one or two that said there's not enough computers for their students. So I'm not sure why that, those teachers said that as well. So we'll have to figure that out. And because you would expect that most of the answers would be now that we're entirely one-to-one kindergarten through, right? Mm-hmm.
Are you able to go through the data to find out who?
I can. I can only find out that because I made these anonymous. I can only find out down to the building level. So they'll say what building and what grade level they teach. So, you know, we could probably make some guesses in that case. And then there is this question about overall technology-wise, whether it's computers, whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it, whatever it is. Is it unreliable to dependable? This is back in 2014, mostly on the unreliable side. 2020 May moved over more to the right, and last year even more so to the right. Again, a couple of items. We had some issues with Wi-Fi, with Zoom, and you know, stuff like that in the beginning. I think that's where some of those answers are coming from. And then the last two questions I'm just sharing from this past year is what they feel about support, so the amount of support that they get from tech staff, meaning availability, response times, attentiveness. And so that's where we're being rated right now. Number 5 is adequate, and number 10 on the right is more than adequate. And then the other question is quality of service, knowledge, professionalism, ability to solve problem. Where are we at? And you can see the numbers there. And so this gives me a good gauge of like my staff and no, our Daddy. Department and how no, we provide Daddy. The support. And that's pretty much it. Any questions for me or anything to clarify?
It's good. Good progress.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I'm always trying to... Oh, I'm sorry. The last few ones I didn't say. The last 10 questions are about technology conditions, and the way that I asked him, the answers are like negative to positive. Is our internet fast enough? You know, how do you feel about internet? Slow, fast. Is our internet connection reliable? Yes, no, right? And so then I aggregate the data to just see... Overall, what is the feel like in terms of our perception of technology? So back in 2014, neutral and too negative were the band was. This is back in 2020. Again, the goal is to move everything over to the right. And here is last year.
Nice.
So
great.
Still, you know, have some areas to work on in terms of trying to get those answers over and making sure that people have at least a neutral feeling about our technology. Or better.
You brought us leaps and bounds.
Yes, you have.
That's right. So
you've done a great job.
Yeah.
I think that is my slide. Yes, that is the last slide.
Thank you, Marty.
Yeah, anything else?
You.
Any questions?
No,
so.
No that's
thank
great.
You.
Thank
great
you.
Great job. Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay. Next up, Chief Financial Officer Ron.
All right. You got a financial expenditures, the checks over 5,000, and the financial statements. Well, the checks over 5,000. It's for activity in August, and the financial activity is through the month of July. Checks over 5,000, as usual, typical, several of them are typical monthly expenses. However, there are also payments for curriculum purchases, several tech-related purchases throughout the district, air filters, AP exams, engine repair, sports uniforms, wall signs, concrete repair, replaced the HVAC unit, parking lot usage over at the church, restripe parking lots, gym floor refinishes, and renewal of some tech licenses. Any questions?
Nope.
All right, moving on to the financials. Statements are for activity through the end of July, and which is only 1 month into the fiscal year, so on a percentage basis, still eight and a third. Through the year, general fund revenues after charter allocations, stand at 4.5% collected as a percentage of the budget, and expenditures are slightly over 8% as a percentage of the budget. Since these financial statements reflect revenues expenses for the month of July, there's not a whole lot of activity in the other funds. General fund, there's still quite a bit of activity. However, the other funds are still attached for your review. Word of caution, these statements are on a cash basis. Again, which means that there are going to be some revenues and some expenses reported in these statements that will ultimately be accounted for in the prior year once we get all of our journal entries done and once we close out the year. But just want to forewarn you, there might be some higher than expected revenues or higher than expected expenses in there. So,
okay.
But just as a caveat. And I'm done.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next up, superintendent update.
Okay, two major things to share with you. First, the state today released the growth data for students that were tested this spring. And it was just released today, so I can only give you kind of initial report there. And to give you just a little bit of a background, let me read from part of their document about growth this year. So, while the state accountability system has been paused for 2021, the growth model can still provide important context about student learning during the COVID-19 pandemic. This year, the department has created two complementary variations of the growth model. Cohort referenced growth and baseline referenced growth. Each approach provides a different lens on how students, schools, and districts are faring over time. So an editorial comment here, the fact that they're taking two approaches shows that there isn't like one way to view growth, mm-hmm. and understanding the significance of whatever method they have is as important as the actual numbers. It's like, and different states do growth differently. So the cohort reference, or the traditional cohort reference growth calculations, I'm going to give you the numbers here in just a quick sec. So the cohort referenced calculations, this are the statewide median growth percentile. It resets each year to 50. Where 50 is the median. And so being above 50 means that the students are growing more than the state median. And if it's less than 50, it means they're less. This is the approach that the state has historically used. Because it is norm referenced against the current cohort of students, major changes in statewide trends may be masked. New baseline referenced growth approach. I don't expect you to understand all of this. It takes some time to really understand what each one is and how they're similar or how they're different. What this one does is it compares the current student progress against previous year expectations so that median growth percentiles can vary above and below 50. So instead of being at 50, the median growth percentile can be lower or higher than 50, indicating whether students made more or less progress than historical peers. This approach provides a comparison to past performance to detect statewide shifts. So I'm not sure how the statewide shifts relate to district numbers. This is the approach the department recommends for considering the impact of COVID. So the required tests, and therefore the reporting of tests, was limited to every other grade. So for example, third grade tested, and I forget whether it was math or language arts, but let's just say language arts, and they didn't test in math, they weren't required to. Fourth grade tested in math, fifth grade tested in language arts. I think that's the way it worked. And the same thing through middle school. So our students took all of the tests. So we took the required ones plus the other ones that were offered that weren't required. They only reported on the required ones. So there's a limited set of information from what you're used to seeing, where you see third through at least eighth grade on the CMAS test. So the English language arts, which for fifth grade, the baseline median growth percentile was 51%, and the cohort referenced median growth percentile was 55% for fifth grade. For seventh grade, the baseline was 60%, with the cohort referenced at 70.5%. For math, sixth grade, the baseline was 39%, the cohort was 54%. And for eighth grade, the baseline was 41%, and the cohort referenced was 58%. So what seems to be revealed in these is that our students had above state median growth percentiles. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we'll just need more time to look into specific data to be able to understand more the differences between baseline and the cohort, especially with regards to math, what those numbers mean, that they're under 50% with baseline, but above for the cohort. So, but in reviewing the data for other districts, the fact that so many of Elizabeth's are above the above the 50th percentile with the cohort means that our students grew above the median last year.
That's fantastic.
So the you know, my message that I sent to parents yesterday really kind of covers the other thing that I wanted to talk about, which is it's been an incredible start to the school year. There were a couple of pictures that we weren't able to include because it got too long. So I'll mention one. Our schools have begun field trips again. We did actually take field trips in the spring of last year, and so not. We didn't stop field trips last year completely, but we did reduce them. We have a lot of field trips planned for this year in some regards to make up for ones that didn't happen last year. For example, the sixth grade didn't go on their overnight science trip. But on Friday, the fourth graders at Running Creek went to Dinosaur Ridge and got to be outside, got to explore that site and get the guide's talks about Colorado's long time history and dinosaurs, and boy, fourth graders love dinosaurs. So in the photos that the teachers took, you could really see how much fun the kids were having. The staff has done an amazing job in dealing with getting back to school, incorporating students, a small number, but not insignificant, who were 100% online last year. Especially if there were more of those at the secondary level. And we noticed that some of the students that had been 100% online didn't have the same kind of social norms for interacting that the students who were here. We worked with some of them to, for example, understand what school expectations are and what's okay in school. The teachers at every level, elementary, middle, and high school, have developed protocols for how to support students who are at home when they're healthy because there's somebody in the household who is waiting to test for COVID or has COVID, and we're making a determination whether they can come back to school or not. They're using the lessons learned, not the instructional lessons, but of the mixture between synchronous learning and asynchronous learning. So what's just by the computer versus what's a live broadcast from, how to monitor students' work and to make it easy for them to stay engaged for the temporary period when they're learning at home. It's been much less disruptive not to have to quarantine or use the quarantine protocols to exclude students. That is specifically part of CDPHE, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's new school guidance is a different approach to excluding students from school based on exposure, and to reduce the number of kids that are impacted and keep them in school. So we're grateful that CDPHE realized the negative impact of excluding so many students, because it wasn't just Elizabeth's school district last year that had a very small percentage of students who were excluded that never got the virus. The purpose for excluding them was that if they got the virus, then they wouldn't spread it to others. You know, more than 99.5% of the students that we excluded did not get the virus. So they were all disrupted in their educational process because of being sent home. So, and in talking with superintendents in the Denver area and in the Colorado Springs area, there's been a noticeable decrease in the negative impact because students are able to stay in school when they're healthy. And so we've seen that as well. But just to know that we are supporting those students and those families when we have asked them to stay home. Some of the students are ill, but they're still able to follow a lesson. So we're supporting them as well. But our message, that was sent out, and the message that we're sending home every day at school, and I can't put it up on the screen for you. I can, kind of show you my phone here. I just found this today at the middle school. They have TV screens in their cafeteria, and there's a face, a little sad face. It says, "Stay home if you're feeling sick." That is the message. Stay home if you're feeling sick. COVID symptoms or not. It makes sense. If you're not well, you shouldn't be in school. And, based on the numbers, the vast majority, over 95%, probably close to 98% of our families are keeping their kids home when they're sick. There are a few that aren't. And we're working against years of both staff and family habits of sending their kids to school when they have, symptoms that aren't serious in the parents' eyes. And sometimes when they are, they will give them an ibuprofen and send them to school, and midday when the ibuprofen wears off, we see glassy eyes and a ashen face, and we say, we send them to the help. So that is our main message right now, is to consult with our nurse, our district nurse, if you have any questions about whether or not you should keep your kids home, but to err on the side of staying home if you have any questions. And then also providing parents with a free at-home rapid test, COVID test, to be able to determine for their interest and ours whether or not somebody in the household, whether the student has COVID or not. This is from a state program. So the state provides these to school districts for free. We provide them to families for free. And this gives them the ability to make decisions and based on information, rather than saying, typically get a cold at this time of year, it's just a cold. Great. We make these available. We don't require anybody to, but we received a shipment of 300 of them today, and they've been distributed to the schools. We just ran out of our previous stock, and we're expecting to get another 900 next week through a new program. I don't know that the program has a name that will in large part provide tests directly to families. 80% of the stock that the state is going to be getting will be going directly to families throughout the state. 20% will be given to institutions like public schools. So we're on their list. We're scheduled to get a shipment next week. And one of the ways, for example, that we intend to use these is, for example, give give one to every staff member that wants to take one home with them. And if in the evening they're not feeling well, if the next morning at 5:30 or 6 they're not feeling well, take a test. The tests are very reliable when there are symptoms, and give that kind of a tool both to our staff and to families. So there have been a lot of events that were, some of them were photographed. I've been at many of them. The enthusiasm is just palpable. It's evident. Paul, you're smiling. You've seen it.
Yeah.
And experienced it, and I think it's one of the most enthusiastic starts of a school year that I've seen in 19 years as a superintendent, to see elementary students coming into the school with their parents in tow, pointing out to the staff, these are my parents, and to see the smiles on parents' faces, to be able to be in their children's schools, to meet their teachers face-to-face, and to meet some of the other families that their students have class with. It's been tremendous. So, and as you know, we've been able to really limit any spread of the virus in our schools through the measures that we're taking. We do believe that maybe 3 students at the high school did get the virus at school, all 10th graders, through extended exposure, meaning they were in 2 or 3 classes together and sat close together. But in the approximately 28 or 29 other instances of people coming into our schools with the virus, that there has been no virus spread. And as explained in the letter, the way that we know that is we investigate each positive case and its potential connections with any other positive case for 14 days prior, and we monitor it for 14 days after. And when we have evidence that they were in the same class, we then, were they close? Were there other instances where there was close contact? And that's why we believe that 3 students did get the virus at school. And then we're looking at ways to mitigate that in the future. And I don't want to say what we might be doing. It would be more of a request for students, if they're in multiple classes, to not always sit together. But that can end up disrupting the high school seating charts. Mr. Blackham's in the audience, he knows what that could do. So it's not something that you can easily implement without kind of creating a chaos, which we wouldn't want to do. But that's one of the things that we're considering, is because we know throughout the district, if there isn't that extent of close contact, that you can be around somebody that has a virus and not get it. But that length of time is like orders of magnitude longer than the 15 minutes that was the protocol last year, if you were 15 minutes or more. So we will continue to look at the data, continue to try to understand if there is any spread, what needs to be done to prevent it in the future. And then also, as indicated in the letter, we're continuously monitoring the CO2 levels to understand if, for example, an HVAC unit is not working properly. And we found a couple that haven't. And then also something looking forward, Kristen and Jason and others have been working a lot on an event, Homegrown Talent Open House, in about 2.5 weeks. It's going to be held at the high school, in the gym and in the cafeteria and outside. Maybe later, I don't know if it's on the agenda. Maybe later in the evening you guys can can think about and prepare just a quick update for the board on what that event's going to look like. But it'll be held at the high school. We're moving forward with it. But we've been monitoring the CO2 levels in the gym and in the cafeteria while they're full. Volleyball games filled with students to have a baseline and understand how well those systems are working. And right now, they're working extremely well. The levels of CO2 are in the 400s of parts per million, which outdoor air is 400. So, and anything under 700 by experts is a good number, but that we're in that range of 400 and something means that there's just a lot of outside air coming in, and so we are very confident that that event will be able to accommodate whatever number of people we have, both inside and outside, and keep the spread of the potential spread of the virus absolutely minimized. So we really look forward to that event. It's been in the planning works for fireworks, maybe?
I don't know.
Well, it's thunder.
That's thunder. I just saw a lightning bolt.
Oh, yeah. It's been in the works, though, for quite some time.
Quite some time. So we're really excited about that. So that's the end of my report. Unless there's any questions.
So I have a couple questions. First of all, you were saying about these tests. How do parents or families get these? Or is it something like if their child gets sent home, they'll just immediately get sent with them?
Yeah, well, what our offices do is to offer them to the kids when they get sent home. If a parent calls and says, somebody in the household is getting tested, one of my children has a cold, should my other children come to school, we would ask them to wait either until the symptoms have resolved, or if they want to pick up a test or a test for each of their children to take to come in and pick up a test, or we could send it home if there was still somebody in school. So they are available to parents, but most of the time we're distributing to the students, and they can choose whether or not to actually use them.
Sure.
And we...
No, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did, yes. Okay. Thank you. And then I had one more question in regards. I'm just off on a couple numbers, and I just would like some clarification. The letter that you sent out to the families, I thought was an excellent letter. I love seeing the pictures of that. It was fantastic. And then I saw a letter that came out from the Elbert County Public Health Department stating that for them, they said that since school has started, that there's 48 confirmed cases of COVID. And on your letter, it stated that since school has started, that there's 32 individuals. So, I mean, 16 is a big number, especially when you're looking at that high, I mean, the cases and all. I mean, is there... I don't understand where the difference...
Can you read what public health said?
Yes, it says... since the beginning of the academic year has yielded a total of at least 48 known confirmed cases among schools in the district, Running Creek, Singing Hills Elementary, Elizabeth Middle School, and Elizabeth High School. I mean, I could read the whole paragraph. I mean,
if you just from the start,
of the paragraph, sure. Elbert County Public Health is aware of at least 15 confirmed cases of COVID amongst EHS students, including numerous cases among 10th grade students. Excuse me. Additionally, there are at least 2 cases among school employees, both of whom have regular contact with the students. Investigation of these and previous cases identified since this beginning of the academic year has yielded a total of at least 48 known confirmed cases amongst the schools in the district.
So we daily provide public health information about positive cases in the schools, however we have learned about it. And we provide the names, the grade levels, and the dates to public health. And our numbers are the ones, we have 32, where we can put names and dates and locations. And that's a reliable number that we there aren't currently more than that, or fewer than that. There are currently 4 students who were not literally in, well, that were in the same class at the high school. So there are 6 students who've tested positive at the high school. There are only 4 that are in the same single classroom. And so that's part of our determination of whether there was spread in the high school. So the numbers that were cited there in terms of 15, I think that the number is 18, or whatever I put in the letter yesterday, right? So I don't agree with that number. I think it's not 15. The discrepancy between 32 cases in the high school and 48, I can only speculate based on the wording that you read, is that public health is counting students that are enrolled in Elizabeth High School but did not come to school when they had COVID. And that they have information that there are students that are enrolled in our district that did not come to school, but they're counting those as part of the 48. So what's really important, I think, about those, what did you say, there were 15 or 8, that difference?
16.
Is that at a minimum, those 16 students, families, did the right thing. They kept their students home when they had COVID, and therefore did not expose potentially others at the school. Mm-hmm. So those numbers, those are the, you know, if everybody did that, we wouldn't need any protective measures in the school.
Right.
Because no one would be coming into the school with the virus. Right? But the reality is we know that some students will come in knowing that they have the virus, because that has been the majority. They know that they have it. They know that somebody in the household has had it. They know that somebody is waiting. Unfortunately, that's been the majority of people that have come in. But we know that some won't know. And we have to be ready to be able to keep everybody safe when that happens. And that's why we are doing all of the measures that we're doing. So I think that difference is students that are enrolled in our district. Well, let me clarify that, because I'm speculating. Mm-hmm. I don't know where public health got that number, but whether they're just school age residents in Elizabeth, because we have a lot of students that live in Elizabeth that open enroll in Douglas County. I don't know how they're parsing whether the student is actually enrolled out of the district. Because they're not consulting with us on that data.
Well, I would certainly hope that they would do their research. I mean, if the child is not going to Elizabeth School, that they would not be putting their number in our school district.
Right.
Or, you know.
But a lot of what I saw in that was zip code related.
Yeah.
Which means this zip code appears within your district boundaries. So if they are including that, that's concerning.
That's
right.
Skewing, yeah.
There's the greatest number of students in the Elizabeth School District that enroll outside of the district enroll in Douglas County. Mm-hmm. There are some that enroll in Kiowa, and there are some that enroll in Elbert.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not clear, that information wasn't made clear in their statement, but that's the only explanation that I can imagine right now, because we are the ones who provide Elbert County Public Health with all the positive cases in our schools, including the ones that they don't have access to, meaning to say, if the individual took an at-home test and did not use the telehealth eMed application, it doesn't get reported to the state. We learn about it, and we report it to the county, for better or worse, we do.
Sure.
But that information wouldn't be provided to the county unless we provided it to them. So, you know, they get certain information from the state. We often hear the same thing because our parents trust us, and so they call, and they tell us whether it's the school or the nurse. I'm awaiting a test. What should I do? Wait for the result.
Sure.
Somebody in the household is awaiting a test. Stay home. They've tested positive. Good. This is what you need to do.
Well, thank you for the clarification. I think it's obvious. To go by the numbers that you gave, it makes more sense than, because it's here, you're hands-on.
It's hard data. Yeah.
Right, literally, so.
What we're concerned first and foremost about is that students and staff can come to school and have the minimal risk of contracting the virus. And there's two ways that we do that. One is by all the mitigation efforts that we take within the schools, right? And then the other is to ask folks to stay home when they're sick. And the other things, because between those two things, it keeps our schools the safest that they possibly can be.
For sure. So,
yeah.
And I do want to say that our parents last year and this year have, despite the number of students who've come in, and even the ones who've come in when they're not following our protocols, it's a very small percentage, that the vast majority are following our expectations, and it's not easy sometimes to follow them because it means dealing with child care issues for some of them. I mean, and even leaving a middle schooler at home alone because there isn't going to be is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that it's not easy for parents, and they've been very cooperative, so many of them. So it's really, it's a small fraction, and, we just want to get better at that. But anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you again for the clarification. I appreciate it.
Anybody else have anything?
No.
Okay. So we'll move on to public comment. I guess I'm just signing up. I'll read a statement before the public comment. During the Board of Education session, time will be provided on the agenda during public participation for members of the community to speak to the board on items of interest or concern that do not appear elsewhere on the agenda. It is the Board of Education's practice not to hear in public session complaints against any district personnel. In addition, it is a violation of federal law to discuss in public or elsewhere individual student issues, family, according to FERPA, Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. Each person addressing the board will have 3 minutes to present his or her views. We will ask you to wrap up as you get near the end of the allotted 3 minutes. The boundaries are designed to keep the meeting focused. And questions or comments requiring feedback will be referred to the superintendent for consideration and later response. We have Roxanne Avias. If you could come up to the podium, that would be great. Thank you.
Good evening, directors. My name is Roxanne Avilas, and I'm a parent of two children who attend Elizabeth School District. I'm also an educator, and I previously taught within Elizabeth School District, which is where my love for this community and the residents that reside here began. I'm speaking to you all tonight to express my concern for the way this district has handled the pandemic thus far. Over the last few weeks, our neighboring districts have increased protections within the schools as the positivity rates are currently climbing. Unfortunately, Elizabeth School District did not follow suit. In fact, most districts have put in place several mitigation methods to keep our children safe, where Elizabeth School District has done nothing short of claiming to improve the air quality within schools. Just last week, the Elbert County Public Health Department recommended for the second time this month that Elizabeth School District begin implementing more effective mitigations within our schools in order to control the spread of COVID. The Elizabeth School District chose to ignore those recommendations and instead chose to do nothing. Just last night, Superintendent Bissonnette sent an email communication where he outlined the current mitigation methods that are in place, almost all of which were connected to improved air quality. There was no mention of hand washing, sanitizing, not even a word about enhanced cleaning of our facilities, let alone masks. Many of these strategies were strongly suggested by the Elbert County Public Health Department. As of this afternoon, our one-week positivity rate in Elbert County is over 13%, while the rates are currently below 6% statewide. The vaccination rates in this county are subpar, with less than 50% of residents being vaccinated against this virus. If we had been using one of the previous COVID dials, we would be currently in level red, which is severe, yet the school district is going about business as usual. While we have not yet seen the impact of COVID in our schools as it relates to deaths, thankfully, we have had quite a few residents hospitalized since this pandemic began, including a 17-year-old child just last November. We have no proof that COVID is not spreading within our schools. Children are seated in a room or several rooms with many others unmasked, including on buses. They eat lunch together as a grade level and play at recess again as a grade level. There is also a large parent population on social media encouraging one another not to get their sick children tested because it increases numbers and causes issues with things such as youth sports. Clearly, some of the residents cannot be trusted to handle their sick children appropriately, yet we are trusting them to screen their children each morning before sending them to school. While I know that my views are the minority in this county, they should not be devalued. I'm here tonight to ask you all to please put in mitigations in our schools to protect our children. In his email last night, Superintendent Bissonnette cited several articles which were dissected to only point out information pertinent to air quality. In the same articles, you will find many reasons to put in place a mask mandate, at least for our unvaccinated population. For example, in the article from the researchers for the Center of Disease Control and Prevention of Georgia, quote, requiring all teachers and staff members to wear masks reduced the incidence of the virus by 37%. In addition, the Colorado Public Radio article referenced defines breakfast, lunch, and snacking within schools as, quote, a breeding ground for COVID, and they highly suggest that masks be worn in schools as the Delta variant is extremely contagious. Not only does the CPR recommend masks be worn in schools, so do the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. In closing, I urge you all to take this pandemic more serious, to trust and believe in the science, and to stand by your core value of students being at the heart of everything that you do. And I ask that you protect our children before it's too late. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. We appreciate you coming in tonight. So we will move on to the consent agenda. Can I get a motion to approve items 9.1 through 9.5?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Dr. Breckendorf?
Yes.
Dr. Frommenfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye.
Do you want to have them talk about the open house under discussion items?
Yeah.
We're skipping action items. I scrolled up too far on my screen. Okay, can I get a motion to approve item 10.1 for first and final reading of revised policies? And if you guys look, they're just little technical
right.
changes. They're not anything of major substances. CBB, recruitment of superintendent, and GDBC, support staff supplementary pay overtime.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Dr. Breckendorf?
Yes.
Dr. Frommenfeller?
Yes.
Dr. Hines?
Aye.
Dr. Karcher?
Aye.
Yeah, discussion items. Do you guys want to talk about the...
Yeah. Do you guys mind?
Yeah. Sure.
It's a big event, so it needs to...
Yeah.
Jason's a creative piece. we have been working together to plan the HTI open house, which is going to be September 30th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Elizabeth School, or High School, in the cafetorium and the gymnasium. We are going to have roughly 4 food trucks outside, so we'll be inviting community members, staff, parents, and students out to enjoy some food truck options. And while they're there, when they're done eating, to walk through the gymnasium, and we're going to have some different stations set up that focus on some of the great work we've done under HTI. You had an update during the last working session, so we're going to highlight all of those activities, everything from internships to concurrent enrollment courses, to how the elementary schools are implementing the graduate profile competencies in the classrooms. It's going to be very interactive and informal for community members to just come up, talk to staff who have been doing this every day. I think you guys found it very informative when you spoke to them. So we want to make it fun. The band is going to play. The marching band will be outside, hoping for good weather. We'll be outside playing during the food truck portion and a lot of different activities. And anything I missed?
I think you got as much as I can think of. Yeah, the band will be there 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. The entire thing will be 5 to 7 p.m. We're working on getting email notices out to various audiences, getting some postcards ordered and printed. They're on order, being printed. We'll actually hand deliver those throughout the community, get some posters made and hung around the community as well. And we've got a meeting coming up on Wednesday with the FCCLA, FBLA, and TSA. They've been volunteered to help us out with getting the word out and doing some of that, you know, marching around the community and getting some of those posters hung and things like that. So they're going to help us out. What else are we doing?
I do want to say, though, that's been one of the fun aspects of this. We've been working with the students at the high school. Student Council helped us with the food trucks, securing them. So they're on board and they're really helping us out and getting a taste of that piece of things. Mm-hmm.
And staff working with them is also very, very enthusiastic as well. So,
good.
Lots of help there. So,
awesome to see everyone there.
Thank you, guys.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Next up, BOE planning. Our next meeting is Monday, September 27th.
Checking.
I'll be there.
I'm here.
Yep.
Get back to the agenda. We had executive session earlier. We don't need one now. So. 7:17 and we'll adjourn this morning.